KUJZ is 95.3 The Score.
I hope you're ready. It's that time. Climb aboard, all aboard, for the radio ride known as Sports Talk.
I got a bad feeling about this.
I can't take it anymore.
I am losing my mind.
Brought to you by Guarantee RV.
I know that, dude.
On Highway 99 in Junction City. Online at GuaranteeRV.com.
Alex is sitting there saying, what the heck are they talking about?
I would have Mariota out at 3 in the morning drunk, pawning his Heisman Trophy to get into an illegal poker house.
And now, a guy with lots of issues.
Yeah, I kind of do have issues.
No, I mean, like, lots of issues.
Shut up and get on with the program. Dude is a snot.
And broadcasting them, searching for answer.
Who is this?
It's Steve Tannen.
Have another donut, you fat pig.
Uh-oh, guess what day it is? Huh? Anybody?
Julie, hey, guess what day it is?
Oh, come on, I know you can hear me. Mike, what day is it, Mike? Leslie, guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Woo-hoo!
Welcome back. Sports Talk, the 5 o'clock hour on a Wednesday. Good to have you along. At the bottom of the hour, do a little throwback interview with Curtis Conway the day before Oregon took on Florida State in the Rose Bowl, the first ever college football playoff season. Playoff, of course, Marcus's Heisman year and just legendary. Sad note from the National Football League. Hall of Fame defensive lineman for the Lombardi Packers, Willie Davis. Dr. Feelgood passed away in at the age of 85, almost 86 years old. I love reading about some of these guys because he came out in the 1956 draft and he went in the 15th round, but 181st overall. So that makes you a sixth rounder. Now, yeah, right, 32 teams. Yeah, that's close enough. I'm going to give myself credit there. So he originally was with the Browns, joined the Packers in 1960, which I believe meant he was part of all five Green Bay championship games, because in 1960, if my Packer history is somewhat on, they lost the NFL title game, and then the Giants' job opened up, and Lombardi was a New York guy, and there was question because he took a 7-5 team. I mean, the Packers actually went through a period where they weren't very good in the 1950s. I mean, in a row to close out the decade, they won four games, three games, one game. Lombardi took over, and you know, had Bart Starr, Paul Hornung, and you know, the core of a roster that would grow into one of the greatest dynasties in American pro sports history. And so he stuck around, kept the job, and you know, in 1961, won it. 1962, won it. 1965, won it. That 65 Packers team with Herb Adderley and Boyd Dowler. Who is it? Ray Scott, the old play-by-play guy. Dale to the left, Dowler to the right. Back split, Taylor behind Starr. And then they won the first two Super Bowls from 61 to 67. They won the championship five times. And Davis was a part of every single solitary one of those teams. And he passed away, like I said, today at the age of 85. And, yeah, I'm looking at him now. Durability Jones. I mean, he played in every game. He didn't start every game, but, you know, they played 12 games until 1961 and then 14. And it's it. He played in every single game for the entirety of his career. He was a reserve with Cleveland And then his last 3 years with the Packers, he didn't start one game in 67, one game in 68, and two games in 69. But, man, you want to talk about a dude who earned his keep. Multi-Pro Bowler. Of course, you know, you always want to check to see the greats of the greats of the greats. Five-time first-team All-Pro in 62, 4, 5, 6, and 7. Five Pro Bowls. And, you know, if you look at, man, sometimes you do the math and you look at the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Man, that's a tough make. I mean, here's a guy at the core of the Packer defense that was as renowned as any in the history of the game when he retired, and it took him a fourth or fifth try to get inducted as a player into Canton. Whew. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. If you want to jump on in, feel free. The water's fine. Talking about the, you know, by this time on Friday in 48 hours, we'll know for a fact where all the Ducks are going. The Liberty made a trade today. Liberty. That means that, assuming, which most are, that Sabrina Ionescu goes one, the Liberty have three more first-round picks. And number nine is their next highest, so will, in fact, the teammates who have basically transformed Oregon women's basketball with a lot of help, I might add, the last 4 years, and just generated attention for this sport that was unprecedented, end up being teammates. I mean, think about that from where Ruthie Heber grew up in Alaska, you know, Sabrina in Walnut Creek. They met here and now end up in the Big Apple. And I'm not saying it's going to happen. There's, you know, at this point, you would never expect a general manager or a personnel front office person of New York to tip their hand. But, you know, when you look at, it seems like the first four or five players look kind of obvious. So, And if you if you were building a team from literally the bottom up, to get teammates like this who are so in sync, could play high low, high post, low post, screen and roll with the best of them, unique skill sets, young players, to get your fan base excited, why not? All right, so what are you guys thinking about? 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Today would have been Jackie Robinson Day in Major League Baseball. What else was – oh, yeah. Man, that really disturbing story about the plane crash that took the life of Roy Halladay. So he was killed in early November 2017. Here it is, November 7th, 2017. And this story that posted on ESPN just a little over 2 hours ago, the Hall of Famer was not only doing extreme acrobatics in a plane he had only had 14 and a half hours of airtime in, but we're talking crazy high levels of amphetamines when he lost control and was killed in Tampa Bay. This according to a report released today by the National Transportation Safety Board. How about amphetamine levels about 10 times that are required therapeutically, a high level of morphine, an antidepressant that they say, by the way, surprising, could impair judgment. And this nut was performing high pitch climbs, steep turns, sometimes came within 5 feet of the water. And apparently, if you do maneuvers like this, when it comes to aeronautics and flying a small private plane, I got nothing. But I could understand the terminology. This kind of maneuver puts loads of nearly two times gravity on the plane, which is an Icon A5. It's a two-seater. It's an amphibious aircraft, and he had only owned it a month. And apparently, on the last maneuver, he went into a steep climb, and his speed fell, and it's a propeller plane, went into a nosedive, crashed into the water. And so now it's not bad enough that, you lose family member, a dad, a husband, and now you learn about this, and you see a tweet from a week before from Halliday. I keep telling my dad flying the Icon I-5 low over the water like is flying a fighter jet. And, you're all hopped up like that. And, we talk about sometimes you can grow beer muscles. Well, how about being buzzed out of your mind like that, feeling invincible, and you get the rush of speed and that kind of adrenaline. And apparently, oh, I see. So I was wondering about how this works legally. So he had taken off from a lake behind his home 15 minutes before the crash. And one report says he was doing about 100 miles an hour, 11 feet above the water, before he went into these obvious suicidal maneuvers. And so one of the investigators said he had never seen an airplane flying that low with steep climbs, deep dives. He came really close to some houses in Gulf Harbor there. And he crashed, by the way, in like 4 feet of water. And the initial autopsy showed amphetamine, morphine, and an insomnia drug in his system. Didn't specify how much. An antidepressant, a muscle relaxant. He was on a painkiller, some opioids, and that's disturbing. I mean, obviously, he's not feeling anything anymore, but that poor family to have to relive this kind of horror all over again. Damn. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Once a day, I've been hitting the rewind button and going back exactly a year. And I've used this word before because it really is applicable. It's been kind of therapeutic, and it depends on what how you get your joy from sports. Is it from playing? Is it from watching? Is it from hanging out with your friends? I like reading about it. I like reading about games. I like previewing a game and getting an idea of, what a team's strengths might be. And then seeing it actually play itself out, and then go back and check the box scores, check some of the ratios, whether it's hoops, assist to turnover, if a pitcher was able to navigate through seven innings with four walks, getting double plays. And so when I go back and do the recaps, look at some of the highlights, it's something I've really come to enjoy doing every day. I think we started last Thursday. So April 15th, tax day 2019, it was a Monday. Things are just getting rolling in the NBA playoffs. The first round of the Stanley Cup chase was winding down. It was the day after Tiger's Masters win. And I remember the sports world was buzzing. And, a lot of you were talking about it because you know the deal. When Tiger's in contention, especially at an event like the Masters, 40% more people watch. And we were entering week three of the still very young Major League Baseball season. There were only two games that night on the NBA hardwood, and it was both of them obviously went by the philosophy of check your defense at the door. In Philadelphia, Ben Simmons cranked out his first ever postseason triple-double. 18 points, 10 boards, dozen dimes. Sixers 145-123. just demolished the Nets. Joel Embiid, 23 points, 10 rebounds, six different Sixers in double figures, and that at the time evened the series at one. At Golden State, the Clippers rose up and squared that set at ones, 135-131. Lou Williams, how often do you see this? I wonder what the record is for a playoff game. Points off the bench, 36, not to mention 11 assists. The second half of that Warriors game, you know, when you go back and read some of this now, I remember seeing the game and thinking, well, Golden State is up 73-50 at halftime. And when the third quarter started, they were up 31. And so, you know, you flip off. It's a Monday. Who the hell knows what I was doing that night? But the Clippers went nuts. They scored 44 points in the third, 41 in the fourth. It was the largest comeback in NBA playoff history, anyone, ever. And, you know, also in that game, when something like this happens, you don't know what kind of a trend it's going to start, but they lost Boogie Cousins to a leg injury, and obviously he would be followed by Clay. And then, well, Steph was this year. Durant, you know, ended up missing the finals last year as well. It was also a busy evening in the chase for Lord Stanley's Cup with four games, half the teams in action. The Carolina Hurricanes hosted their first playoff game in a decade, and they shut out the then Cup champions, Washington Capitals, 5-0. The rookie, Warren Fogle, who had just 10 goals all season, had two. The pride of Ostrava, Czechoslovakia, Peter Mrazek, benefited from a suffocating defense. I mean, he just faced 16 shots and gets a postseason shutout. At Toronto, the top overall pick in the 2016 draft, Austin Matthews, scored his first of the postseason, assisted on another. Leafs grinded out a 3-2 win against the Bruins. That gave Toronto a 2-1 edge in this first rounder. And in kind of a throwback series, Colorado put one on Calgary 6-2. They scored three in the first, set the stage. They would open up 4-0 and just cruise on home. In another game, Nashville netminder Pekka Rinne turned aside 40 Dallas shots. Predators went up 2-1. Beat the Stars in a nail-biter 3-2. Rinne stood on his head. At the end of that game, I saw the last 2.5 minutes, Dallas down one had the extra skater on and put 7 shots on goal, and he turned them all aside. On the baseball diamond, the subject of today's great piece in the Register Guard by Steve Mims, Dan Straley, the former Thurston standout, threw a gem at Fenway Park for the Orioles. The big righty allowed just a run and 2 hits over 5 innings. The Birds blasted the Bo Sox 8-1. Dwight Smith Jr., a 2-run homer, 4 RBI, and 4 Baltimore relievers kept the door closed the final 4 innings. Christian Rebel Yelich had it going. The Brewers outgunned the Cardinals in Milwaukee 10-7. Yelich, then the reigning National League MVP, who would finish second last season, went yard 3 times, second, sixth, and eighth inning, en route to 7 RBI. The Brew Crew just exhausted its relief corps, used 7 pitchers after the starter, Freddie Peralta, got chased early in the fourth inning. And, you know, I was thinking, how much different would that look now under the new gotta face 3 hitters rule, which I hope we eventually get to see. Knicks guy, Joey Gallo, broke out of a huge slump, hit a bomb, had 3 hits, drove in a couple. The Rangers took down the Angels 12-7. His batting average had dipped all the way down to 167 after a 0-for-16 slump. And we should point out the significance of today, as it was on April 15th, 73 years ago, that Jackie Robinson broke the game's color barrier. And of course, now with the retirement of the Yankees' Mariano Rivera. Number 42 shan't be worn by anybody except on Jackie Robinson Day when everybody wears it. That day, April 15th, 1947, from Ebbets Field in Brooklyn, the Dodgers hosting the then Boston Braves before they would move to Milwaukee. Johnny Sane on the hill for the Braves, dueling with Joe Hatton. Brooklyn wins it 5-3. Jackie Robinson, known as a second baseman, played first base, batted second, went 0-for-3 with a run scored, had a sack bunt, and also hit into a double play. In his first ever at-bat in the major leagues, he grounded out to third. And speaking of the Dodgers, this edition, the Los Angeles Dodgers, 1 year ago, were at home in Chavez Ravine, and they hosted the Cincinnati Reds, who had a 3-2 lead, scoring a run in the top of the ninth. Then in the bottom half, David Freese worked out a walk to put the tying run on base. Then Jacques Peterson hit a walk-off two-run homer to win the game, making a victor of Kenley Jansen. And the Mariners, who, if you remember, got off to a very hot start last year, were slowed by Trevor Bauer in Cleveland, allowed just an earned run over his 6 2/3, 8 strikeouts as the Tribe beat Seattle 6-4. And like Cronkite said, that's the way it was, April 15th. All right. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Before we break, quick shout out to our friends at Big Al State Farm online, BigAlEugene.com. And of course, you know, being in the insurance business, they're finger on the pulse of this new normal with so many in the community going through a very difficult time. And, you know, they're working hard to make sure the new normal feels a little more normal. They're working remotely for you. And, you know, they want to make sure the things that are important are protected. So if you're not sure about your current plan to protect your family and their belongings, you can call them. 686-1522. You can text them at the same number, and you know, they're weekday work hours, Monday through Friday, 9 to 5:30. And it should also be noted, you know, sometimes we say drop in, but yeah, you don't want to do that now. At this time, they require clients to make an appointment to meet with them at the office, and they appreciate your ongoing support and patience just as much. Again, online, BigAlEugene.com, and I appreciate greatly their longtime support of our radio programs here on KUJZ. All right, we'll take a break. We'll be back. Nick will have a Coors Light update, and we'll get into a little throwback interview because it was a great time. It was a memorable season and a really fun talk. And my chat with Curtis Conway of the Big 12 Network, coming your way next, 95.3 The Score.
Sports Talk, sponsored in part by Guarantee RV Supercenters, the first and only RV dealership to offer service 7 days a week. Big city selection and country savings. Visit them online at Guarantee.com.
Ben Lennon will punt now, as that's a huge penalty. On fourth down, steps up, blocked! It is blocked! Almost picked up on the run by Kayvon Thibodeau. Thibodeau blocked it,
and that close!
Oh, man. He had a bounce up to his hands, but it was spinning, and he couldn't grab it.
Our own Jerry Allen and Mike Jorgensen on the Oregon Sports Network. The block punt by Kayvon Thibodeau in the Pac-12 title game. How much of a beast is he going to be this coming season? But I wanted to, an hour ago, we had a nice chat with Matt Preem of 24/7 Sports. Want to thank him for his time and insight. Talking about the offensive line and the acquisition of Anthony Brown as the grad transfer. Talked a lot of hoops and got his thoughts on some of the new faces that'll join Dana Altman's staff, along with chatting up a little about just the magic of the women's program these last couple years. But I was looking at Oregon's secondary. And, of course, with the draft coming up a week from Thursday, I'm a believer that Javon Holland is going to explode. I mean, he's great. There's no question about that. But now as a junior, I suspect one never knows that he goes big, becomes an All-Pac-12 player, maybe makes an All-American team, and bolts for the NFL. You're going to have McKinley, who just what is he going to be capable of? Mikhail Wright, you know, the way he was coming on. Brady Breeze as a senior, Nick Pickett. Did I mention Thomas Graham? Anyway, wow. My guess is as much hype as Herbert got, as much hype as the offensive line got, where, you know, in all of the rankings, it was Oregon going to have the first, the third, the sixth, third, second best offensive line, usually one, two, or three. I have a feeling, and hopefully it'll be nice to get all these preview magazines, despite the fact that there will have been no spring games and limited practices, just to see how this whole thing plays out. If, in fact, we're going to have a 2020 college football season, I just think that there's going to be a lot of hooting and hollering about Oregon's secondary if this curve flattens out and we, in fact, end up with a somewhat traditional, normal 2020 season, which, you know, I'm a betting man. And I don't know what I see happening around this country with testing is not up to par by the numbers. There's not going to be a vaccine or a cure. One in three shot that there are that there's college football with open stadiums this season. And by the way, that is based on absolutely nothing. I'm not saying bet on it. I'm not saying I'm an insider or I have privy to information or that I'm qualified. It's just, man, you open your eyes and you read what's going on and you realize that here we are. And I don't have to tell. Well, actually, now time doesn't quite fly like it once did. But on the 15th of April, so May, June, July, August, 4 weeks and 4 months and 2 weeks from now, North Dakota State's going to be at Autzen Stadium. And there's going to be 58,000 people there. Really? Okay. Sign my name in blood right now for that to happen, but I wouldn't bet a penny on it. All right. 284-8571, the Oregon fuel injection hotline. Let's bring in Ken. Ken, how you doing?
Hey, Steve. I'm great. Hey, just a quick thought for you, you know, listening to you and, you know, the coin toss that is possibly going to be the college football season, if at all. I don't know if you saw what came out from California today from the mayor down there saying that he was the first to even letting fans be in stadiums. So if you get into that, you know, two teams from the Pac-12, and then you start looking at, well, if other places let them, is there fairness? I just worry that we're going to have sports at all, you know, the rest of the year, and that doesn't bode too well, and it's too bad for all cases, but I guess we got to get past it and have everyone be healthy and good again, but kind of stinks if you start thinking about sports.
No, I agree with you. And we don't even know what the future holds, good, bad, or indifferent. We're lucky we know what we're going to be doing this time next week. But I appreciate the call, Ken. And I did hear the mayor of L.A. was like, he doesn't see any stadium gatherings and sporting events with fans until 2021. And there's no reason to, there's no evidence that would indicate he's wrong. There's more to back him up. I mean, optimism and hope are wonderful things, but so is reality and doctors and medical experts and pandemic authorities and science. All right. Let's harken back to the thrilling days of yesteryear. It was New Year's Eve day, our show, prior to the Ducks taking on Jameis Winston and Florida State in the 2015 Rose Bowl. And we had this conversation with Curtis Conway of the Pac-12 Network on 95.3 The Score.
It's time to welcome back one of our favorite guys, terrific wide receiver for USC in the early 90s, first-team All-American in 92, seventh overall pick in the 93 draft by the Bears, had 3,000-yard seasons, almost 600 career catches, now getting it done for A, the NFL Network, and of course, the Pac-12 Network as an analyst. We welcome back Curtis Conway. Curtis, always appreciate your time. How are things going for you this holiday season?
I'm doing great, man. How about everything good with you?
All well, all well. Happy, fun. Obviously, sitting here this time of year, you know, if I were down a little bit, the fans would pick me up all by themselves. So, it's a lot of fun to be able to sit in a place like this where now it's become kind of a hotbed of football. Well, I don't have to tell you, growing up in SoCal, what it's like to, be a part, be around an area that kind of eat, lives, and breathes the sport.
No, absolutely. I mean, you know, especially football. This is that time of the year where everything's pretty exciting. You know, everyone's getting ready for the Rose Bowl, it's bowl seasons, and so it's definitely an exciting time.
Now, I've got to hit you with a side note. Something dawned on a friend of mine. I'm from Jersey, and I was talking to one of my buddies, and he reminded me I was back for right after Thanksgiving in 2003. You were playing for the Jets, and you caught a touchdown pass from Chad Pennington in a win against the Titans, and I was at the Meadowlands. And you always hear about high-level athletes who remember, you know, the pitch they hit for a home run, a big three-pointer. Do you have a pretty good memory of most of your 52 touchdown catches in the NFL?
To be honest with you, not really. That catch I do, because I didn't catch very many touchdowns with the Jets, so I do remember that one.
All right, well, it was from Chad Pennington, and you guys beat the Titans, and you made me and my buddies happy that day, so you can carry that with you.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So the question everybody gets on the show this week, and you go back to the pre-BCS days, this is kind of an interesting side effect of the new system. We get this New Year 6, but it's almost like a throwback. Do you like the fact that, once again, New Year's Day is, again, the most important day in college football?
You know what? I love it, because for myself, to be able to just sit at home on a holiday and watch college football, it's awesome, man, especially meaningful games like we're going to have on New Year. So I think it's great.
We're talking with Curtis Conway of the Pac-12 Network, and many of them will actually be live. The Gamefly pregame show on the scene of the Rose Bowl starts an hour before. You could also settle a discussion we were having, Curtis. Certain schools give out certain numbers that are like a badge of honor. You think of Michigan with one, with Anthony Carter, Braylon Edwards. We figured out you wore number 3 at USC. So did Keyshawn. Mm-hmm. So did Carson Palmer. Does Southern Cal have that kind of tradition, or is that up to whoever the coach is?
You know what? I think it's whoever the coach is. I think they really made a big deal now out of number 55. I think 3 was headed there before Carson won the Heisman. And, of course, you know, if you win the Heisman at USC, that number gets retired.
Right.
But when you look at some of the greats that wore 55, Willie McGinnis, Junior Seau, you know, Chris Claiborne, those some great studs who wore that number also. So, you know, we've had our share of guys who been standouts in the National Football League and in college football who's worn the same number.
All right. So we were kind of right. So year one under Steve Sarkisian just ended. It was an exciting win over Nebraska. Certainly early on, injuries, lack of depth cost them at BC, the Hail Mary to ASU. The sanctions now starting to disappear. Cody Kessler will be back along with the line, a lot of contributors. So year one under Coach Sark and moving forward, how are you feeling about this Trojan program?
I'm feeling really good about the program. I mean, I think when you look at what Sark was able to do with this football team in his first year, I think you have to give him an A. I know a lot of people are down on him when you look at the record, but I take everything in consideration. I mean, number one is not having a bunch of depth offensively and defensively, especially when Josh Shaw went down. He had to move Adoree Jackson over to corner full time, and I just remember having a conversation with Sark in training camp, and he had a lot of big plans for Adoree Jackson on the offensive side of the ball. He had to use him more so on the defensive side of the ball, so that kind of hampered some of the things he wanted to do offensively. I mean, you saw against Nebraska the type of athlete that Adoree is when he has the ball in his hand, and Sark saw that early on. He just couldn't use him as much as he wanted to. So I think overall, you take the Stanford win. Of course, everyone's going to look at the Boston College game. I like to contribute that to a big game hangover over a young team that didn't understand how to get back on track and get on the road and beat Boston College. And then they lose to Arizona State on the Hail Mary, Utah at the end of the game. When you put all of that and you bottle all that up, I mean, you think you have to really look at the type of job Sark did considering the circumstances that he was under.
Now, the last time we talked since then, a first for Oregon. Obviously, Marcus Mariota wins the Heisman. You come from a university out here kind of synonymous with the award. Could you actually put a value on what that could mean to a program as for now forever? Anybody who's looking at Oregon knows it could happen at that school and maybe the immediate impact on recruiting?
Oh, it's huge. I mean, I think that's kind of the ultimate goal for an individual college player outside of winning a national championship is a skilled guy winning the Heisman, especially at quarterback. If you look at what Marcus has done at Oregon as a quarterback, it gives the next guy a lot of hope because now the attention is there. It's almost like a championship guy who is coming back next year, our team, and say you have to beat him. Well, at Oregon, a quarterback can say, look, if Marcus can do it, I can do it. Now, Marcus was very exceptional. You know, I like to say he was probably one of the best read options and option quarterbacks to ever play the game, considering he can throw the ball and the speed running the football. But it definitely helps out in recruiting because, you know, What kid wouldn't want to win the Heisman? And going to Oregon gives him a chance now.
Why don't we finish with a couple of Rose Bowl questions. The last 2 years, Florida State's had great defense, ranked 7th one season, 3rd the other. Now they're about 50th, a little bit of a dip. They lost their coordinator, 4 NFL draft picks, and now they're facing an Oregon offense that's probably as healthy as it's been since like week 2 or 3. The guys on the line have healed up. They got their center back, Thomas Tyner. What do you think about this matchup, that Seminole defense versus the way the Oregon offense is playing?
Well, I think it's going to be a great matchup. Number one, anytime you got the ball in number 8's hand, you can do a lot of things. And so his decision-making is going to be crucial in this matchup, considering the way he runs with the football and being able to give it to a guy like Freeman. And you just mentioned Thomas Tyner, two excellent backs who can get the job done. In a game like this, you got to throw numbers out of the way. You got to look at film. You got to see matchups. You got to see strengths and weaknesses because you're coming from a different conferences where you don't really have an opponent that you both play where you can really decide. So it's really going to come down to who's the best at what they do. You know, Oregon being able to run the football and fairly throw the ball downfield off the read option, and Florida State using their athletic ability and size on defense. You know, when you look at Oregon in the past, they've struggled with teams that was just as fast but more athletic and bigger than they were. And I think this is what you're seeing coming from Florida State. I mean, when you look at their defense, according to some of the draft experts, they have at least three or four guys on that defense that they're talking about could go on anywhere from one to three in terms of rounds. So they have some great athletes on defense. So it's going to really come down to Oregon executing on offense.
All right. Finally, the injury bug obviously dealt the Duck defense a terrible blow. All-American corner Ifo Ekpre-Olumu tore up his knee. And everybody's saying the right thing about next man up, as well as Troy Hill has played along with some of the young guys. But you're a receiver. Their best guy is down. Any way around this being a major area of attack for FSU and their superstar Rashad Greene? And how dangerous is this circumstance for Oregon?
Yeah, if I'm a receiver, if I'm Rashad Greene, I'm licking my chops, because if you lose a guy like Ifo, and not taking anything away from the other guys, but you have to think that you're going to see a lot of zone coverage in this football game. I can't see this defense playing any kind of man, because if you man up now, not only do you have Green, but if you're playing man on Green, you got to have some kind of bracket coverage on O'Leary trying to guard him. So I think as a whole, playing wide receiver and quarterback, it kind of gives you an edge to say we might not see as much blitz. We may not see as much man-to-man because they just don't have the guys in the secondary that we feel that can cover our guys man-to-man. And, you know, let's not forget, you know, we talk about Oregon's running game, and trust me, I love it. But, you know, if there's a guy on the other side of the ball, you know, Dalvin Cooks, who can run the football also. So, and Florida State, they oppose a balanced offense. You know, you kind of know what you're going to get out of Oregon. The thing is, Marcus, he has three options, so you have to try to guess right. You know, with Florida State, they are a balanced team. You know, they're throwing the ball about 35 times a game. They're running the ball about 30 times a game. So, you know, you have to come in there with a great game plan to stop that running game. But I think in that secondary, losing a guy like Ifo, it takes away some of the things that you can do with a guy like him, because he could man up with a guy like Green.
All right, Curtis Conway, always great information and a lot of fun speaking with you. Enjoy the rest of bowl season. And for you and your family, have a healthy and a happy new year and a great 2015.
I appreciate it, Steve. Thanks for having me, buddy.
All right, have a good one. The show before one of the great moments in Duck history, thumping Florida State in the 2015 Rose Bowl. Let's take a break. We'll be back with more Sports Talk 95.3 The Score.
And now, it's the Coors Light refreshing tweet of the day.
They are trending, twittering, tweeting, you name it.
On Sports Talk with Steve Tannen.
LOL, laugh out loud, OMG, oh my God, WTF, why the face?
Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
Hi, everybody.
Yo, Doc Nick.
Oh, boy, I got a sneeze. Oh, man.
Achoo!
Right. I'm going to...
Achoo! Anyway, Nick's going to get to the tweet of the day once he gets the sneeze out of his system we welcome you back to the home stretch. Okay there, Holmes?
I tried to scare the sneeze. I think I scared the sneeze back. I'm not going to sneeze. It's not going to happen. Nick Rogers here at the Coors Light Prospered Sports Desk for the Coors Light Refreshing Tweets of the Day. Coors Light, mountain cold refreshment that is made to chill. Don't have a lot of great tweets today. I don't really know what happened with Twitter. It's become very visual, Twitter has. A lot of memes being posted. There's not a lot of content that you can just, like, talk about because you know what you're talking about. It's got to do whatever. I don't know. It's hard to do on the radio because it's hard to talk about pictures when I'm the only person that can see them. One of them is from @SundownMotel. That's Bill Hanstock. Found an old tweet of his that said, "Reminder, Jared Goff is the exact midpoint of Michael Cera and Ryan Gosling." And he posts a picture of Michael Cera when he infamously grew a very bad mustache. It's not very good. Turns out Jared Goff has also grown a mustache. I keep wanting to say draw. They're not drawing mustaches on themselves. They're growing mustaches during quarantine. And Jared Goff looks like Michael Cera's brother at this point, with the bad mustache, very similar shaped heads. It's pretty funny when you get to look at it. Again, it's a picture on the radio. You got to look at it to see it. What else do we got? The New York Liberty made a move, and at Eric underscore Gunderson kind of leading with something that we've been talking about a lot. If the New York Liberty make this move so that they can draft Sabrina One, and then they take Ruthie Hebert with the number, I think it's 7 pick that they added in this trade, that team is going to become the most popular. Do you think it would become more popular than the Blazers? The New York Liberty.
In these parts?
Yeah. No, let's just... Nah. This is the greater Eugene Springfield area.
Nah.
No, still a blame. Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
But our tweet of the day is some good refreshing news, the refreshing tweet of the day. Awful Announcing had previously reported that a camera operator who worked the Pistons Jazz game had been in a coma while battling COVID. And today they were able to report that freelance cameraman Kevin Calhoun was released from the hospital and is recovering at his mother's home in Detroit. So some good news that somebody that was covering was in a coma, battling COVID, got out of it, was released, is back home. Good to hear people getting better and fighting this disease and being able to get past it. And good, positive, refreshing news, some good vibes. I almost said good vibes heading into the weekend. Today is only Wednesday. My goodness. So to see that really weird picture of Michael Cera and Jared Goff, find us on Twitter at 953thescore. I'm on Twitter at Rick Nodgers, and Steve is on Twitter at SportsTalk953. Don't be a jerk. Just do it.
JDI. All righty. Curtis Conway's an awesome guy. Married to Layla I. Lee. That was fun. Good trip down memory lane. And obviously, a fantabulous moment in the history of Oregon sports. In the first ever playoff. Have your Heisman Trophy winner. You kick the crap out of the defending national champions. Infamous Jameis, the Tony Washington play. You know, it's amazing when you, and I know we're running late, but when you consider they scored 972 points in that game. I mean, they just, everything that could go right went right, and yet it's the defensive touchdown that stands out. But anyway, tomorrow, well, we've got things planned. Miran Fader, who wrote a great piece about Sabrina Ionescu in Bleacher Report, will join us. I think we'll weasel Mr. Fentress. So have a great night, everybody. Thanks for hanging for Crunch Time and Sports Talk on 95.3 The Score.